You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I'm aware of the media reports. I'm aware that Congresswoman Waters was talking specifically about this trial and about the unacceptability of anything less than a murder conviction and talk about being confrontational, but you can submit the press articles about that. This goes back to what I've been saying from the beginning. I wish elected officials would stop talking about this case, especially in a manner that is disrespectful to the rule of law and to the judicial branch and our function.
This is April 20th, 2021. That is Judge Peter Cahill addressing the remarks made by Congresswoman Maxine Waters the other night, for which she's still not apologizing, and saying, I said what I said, I stand by it, I'm not going to change anything. And she's getting support. Nancy Pelosi says, I don't think she needs to apologize, but she's also getting pushback. We'll get into all of that for you. But here's the judge of the case that she insisted, standing in the street, we're only going to be happy if we get a guilty verdict. Guilty, guilty, guilty. Reference to Derek Chauvin trial in the case of George Floyd. And she's not accepting any version of guilty that does not involve murder. Not manslaughter, not a reduced charge of murder, but full murder for the maximum of 40 years. If the maximum would be imposed. So she's in the street. And again, I remind you, she was violating the curfew put in place by the Minnesota governor, who's also a Democrat. We want everybody to clear off the streets by 7 p.m. She's out there agitating, encouraging, making remarks like that, which even the judge says those kind of remarks could lead to a mistrial. Now, the attorneys immediately started showing him, the defense attorneys, what's going on. He said, submit it to me. I've seen it. I'm aware of it. And he's going to add some remarks later, I'll let you hear, as to what he thinks of Congresswoman Waters and her value in anything she says. But it's still in play. And then you get you get some praise from some on the left. You get silence from others, which you might as well equate to praise. You get some condemnation, not necessarily from the left. And then you get some awkward, stupid excuses. Don Lemon Fruitcake. CNN's Don Lemon Fruitcake saying only people with half a brain would believe she meant what she said. The problem is, Don Lemon Fruitcake, people with half a brain are the ones out there that are doing that, that are looting, torching, burning businesses, assaulting police, and they think that's going to bring justice and destroying businesses in the community and elsewhere. You got to have half a brain to be doing that. So she's appealing to, obviously, the right audience. There is a move underway to censure Congresswoman Waters. Now, that's a formal public group condemnation. Does not mean expulsion. It's one of the lesser. It's kind of a slap on the wrist. It's a public shaming. And it might cost her some positions on various committees. We're going to get into that. Laura Reese, the Heritage Homeland Security expert, says these riots and progressive actions and endorsements and things like Maxine Waters, what she was doing yesterday, they're all leading to death of law and order. I second that. And death to law and order means death to America. If we continue, we're also going to be joined over the next 2 hours by Peter Pry, Center for Security Policy. War with Russia is coming. War with Russia is coming. Inevitable. But he says it's a cyber war. Still, are we prepared? In fact, he's going to tell us how EMTs, electromagnetic attacks, would hurt us more than Russia. So I don't think we are prepared. That'll be coming up. Oh, by the way, back to Waters, by the way, while she's out there condemning police and vilifying them. When she went into the city, she demanded she have a police escort to get her into the area so she could address everyone. And remember, she's from California. That's not her jurisdiction. She's up there pandering, clearly. But she wanted police protection going in and going out. For the person who doesn't like police and vilifies them, I want my protection. Of course, we understand that. And we finally got a ruling yesterday on the death of the Capitol police officer, Brian Sicknick, who died following the January 6th riot. I don't know why it's kept so long and it kept secret, but now we know for sure there were many lies being told only to make Donald Trump and Trump supporters guilty of something, murder of a Capitol police officer. We'll get into that. And Anderson Cottonmouth Cooper. Anderson Cottonmouth does an interview with a black movie producer. You know him, Tyler Perry. He's got his studios in Atlanta, and everyone's pulling out of Atlanta and Georgia because they're upset with the voter integrity law. Perry's not going. And on top of that, that interview that Cottonmouth set up with Perry did not go the way he expected. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Most of us are taking precautions to avoid COVID in public, but what are you doing to make sure your home is free of COVID? Wellington Environmental is the answer. And here's the great news. Wellington's average cost to professionally treat a home, less than $300. Less than $300. And the cost for treating most offices, not much higher. Be ready to copy a phone number to get on the schedule as soon as possible. First, let me remind you, if you want your own professional fogging device, Wellington sells them, price $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors, save $100. If you want your home or office professionally disinfected by Wellington, here's the number, 314-644-4930. Again, get on the schedule early, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We're looking for a guilty verdict. We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice. But I am very hopeful, and I hope that we're going to get a verdict that is say guilty, guilty, guilty.
Then again, the words of Maxine Waters from the other night, Sunday night, when she appeared in Minneapolis, which she does not represent. As you know, she's a Democrat from California. But she figures she represents the people, so she shows up and she stands out in the street and says, we want a guilty, guilty verdict. We'll accept nothing else. Just because she does not represent the district, I'm not saying she cannot go there and express an opinion. But, I mean, that's really not only over the line in the sense of, let's accept that she could go there and encourage them. But when she's out there basically demanding the jury has to come back with a guilty verdict that will satisfy them, and without adding the next phrase, or we will burn this place down, she didn't say that, but the attitude of many is, we have something like 500 National Guard called out in that region. Chicago, Illinois is sending in some assistance as well, something like 150 troops. And what's the White House doing all this while all this noise is going on and the judge already condemning it? And we're going to get into more of that in the second hour, the judge condemnation and what he thinks of Maxine Waters. You do not want to miss that second hour. Well, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki yesterday basically said that President Joe Biden has a view that exercising First Amendment rights and protesting injustice is a most American thing that anyone can do. Well, I agree with that. And she added that Biden wanted the protests to remain peaceful. Yeah, if you want First Amendment rights, that should be peaceful assembly. And she did say, when the jury makes their deliberations and concludes and a verdict is found, I'm certain the president will speak to that. So what is he going to say if it doesn't come back with what Maxine Waters said, guilty, 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 and of the most severe charge? What is the Biden going to say? How's he going to kowtow to the leftist progressives at that point? And in fact, Maxine Waters' remarks out there, according to the judge, again, we'll get into that in more detail the next hour, she might have just basically given every reason to throw the case out and start a new trial. And if Chauvin is found guilty of the most severe charge, that's going to be the first appeal that somehow or another the jury was influenced by this. She did not help the case of what she wants to see for justice that she thinks she wants. That she didn't help that at all. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, of course, a colleague of Maxine Waters in California, was asked about, do you think Maxine Waters should apologize for asking protesters to, quote, get more confrontational? Those were her words, get more confrontational. Nancy Pelosi's response is, now, I haven't found any audio of this. A CNN reporter is quoting her, so I'm going to go with the quote. The CNN reporter asked the question, do you think she should apologize for calling on protesters to get more confrontational if Derek Chauvin is cleared in George Floyd's death? And Pelosi said, no, she doesn't. In other words, she does not need to apologize. Asked if Waters' remarks will incite violence, Nancy Pelosi said, absolutely not. Well, riddle me this, Nancy Pelosi. Within a couple of hours of Maxine Waters making her remarks Sunday night, somebody decided to do a drive-by and open fire on some of the National Guard troops. A couple were hit, but not seriously. In fact, they might have just been hit by concrete fragments hitting them, not the actual bullets. But somebody decided, oh, I guess it's open season. And I remind you again, as I said earlier, for the woman who wanted to fly in to Minnesota St. Paul International Airport just days of the verdict and then to go to the streets, she said and she wanted in documents she presented with her name on primary protectee, police escort in and out. The report states that Waters flew from Dulles International Airport to Minnesota St. Paul International Airport Saturday, April 17th, days ahead of the verdict, the George Floyd, Officer Derek Chauvin trial. But for the person who is basically calling for more actions in the street and doesn't like cops and says they're all to blame, they're all guilty, they're all bad, and supports defunding police, which jeopardizes the minority community more than it does any other communities. She wanted her protection. Isn't that just sweet? Isn't that just the way it is with the progressives? I got mine. It's tough luck for you. For the same reason, you got Al Sharpton flying in and making a point of showing his video of him walking out to his massive jet. Now, I don't know for sure if he owned it or was leasing it. He was talking about as if it's his jet. It's a pretty good-sized jet. I took a quick look at it. I don't remember if it was a Gulfstream, which is extremely expensive, or a Citation, which none of them are going to be cheap, not the size that I saw. That's not a jet for, like we call a light jet, which I've flown in with Colonel Jack Jackson from time to time. A light jet, you can get maybe $4-4.5 million. It's a small, you got pilot, co-pilot, and room for four passengers, not a lot of luggage. The jet he's in obviously would have room for minimum of eight, in addition to the crew, pilot and co-pilot. But here's Al Sharpton walking out to the jet to go to help the people suffering in Minneapolis. How tone deaf is that? When you hear the left constantly saying the conservatives don't really understand. And here, I'd say, look in your own ranks. How many of them understand? What kind of picture does that present? I'm walking out to my jet. I'm going to fly in, and I'm going to help, and I'm going to bring things around. At least Waters came in on a commercial jet. So I guess I'll give her some credit for that point. And yeah, she's getting praise, I said, from Nancy Pelosi and others, but she's also getting some of this pushback. And that comes in part from remarks of Senator Mitch McConnell speaking on the Senate floor.
It's harder to imagine anything more inappropriate than a member of Congress flying in from California to inform local leaders, not so subtly, that this defendant had better be found guilty or else there will be big trouble in the streets. Again, so much of our nation's quest for civil rights and equal justice has been the fight to get rid of extrajudicial violence, to get rid of rigged trials.
You know what she's calling for, and that again, that's Senator McConnell, get rid of rigged trials. What she's talking about is, let's go back to the kangaroo court. I mean, let's just go ahead and go straight for lynching. As I said, later, before we wrap up today, going to be joined by Laura Reese, the Heritage Foundation on Homeland Security, and going to talk about how these kinds of actions in the streets and the endorsement and support by progressives leading to the death of law and order in this nation, which in turn will lead to the death of this nation. And we have, of course, what are we going to do about Maxine reference members of the Congress? There may well be some Democrats willing to sign on this because we have House GOP leader, House GOP leader, Kevin McCarthy, says he is going to pursue censure of Congresswoman Waters. Now, censure, as I stated briefly in the opening monologue, is basically a formal public group condemnation. The U.S. Constitution specifically grants impeachment and conviction powers to the House of Representatives and Senate, and it gives both congressional bodies a power to expel their own members. It does not mention censure. Each body then adopts the rules allowing censure, which is stronger than just a simple rebuke, but not as strong as expulsion, obviously. Expelling, that's an entirely different story. And a rebuke is one thing, but a censure, that's a little tougher because, like a reprimand, it would not remove a member from their office, so they retain their title, their status, but there could be legal consequences in the sense that they might have to be required, I should say, to give up any committee chairs they hold. And that's why Congressman McCarthy is pushing forward. He said, you know, we're going to have to review this. I mean, this not just a public shaming, but actually to take power away from this woman if this is going to be the way she thinks justice should be carried out. And again, Congresswoman Maxine Waters' response, still defiant. She said the whole civil rights movement is confrontation. Yes, to an extent that's true. But she's also forgetting the basic premise of Martin Luther King and the civil rights confrontation we were seeing then is no violence. We're far from that now. And when you got a member of Congress jumping out here and saying something like that, and it's just not members of Congress, it's not the public, it's not just the right, it's not conservatives. There are members inside the Democrat Party, I'm sure, that are ashamed of it and don't like it, but they're keeping quiet because they got to be careful or the mob will turn on them. They know that. And they also have to be careful because they're going to be facing an election coming up in 2 years. You got to choose your side wisely. You can't just say, okay, flip a coin. No, I got to make a very specific choice. And if I decide silence, I'll go with that, and they can say what they want about you, but I haven't said anything. Well, when you don't say anything, you have said something. But here comes another complaint. Catholic League president, Bill Donahue, the president of the Catholic League, saying, and I'm quoting, "Maxine Waters does not speak for African Americans. In fact, she is not their ally. She is their enemy." And he added, "She needs to be exposed, as do the others, as, quote, race baiters and cop bashers." And of course, you also have, don't forget, Congresswoman Tlaib had been calling for abolition of both police and prisons, saying policing in our country is inherently and intentionally racist. No more policing, incarceration, militarization can't be reformed. Again, the Catholic League president, Bill Donahue, said she did not say in whose neighborhood we should release the murderers and rapists, nor did she, and this is key, please listen, nor did she renounce taxpayer-funded security for herself. Then look at Hollywood. Always a perfect example to show the hypocrisy that exists. Here's Alyssa Milano and performer Madonna, all calling for the elimination of trial for police officers involved in fatal shootings as police exist to uphold white supremacy. And, of course, Chris Cuomo's remarks yesterday that police reform won't happen until white kids start getting killed. A 2020 Gallup survey showed that 61% of African Americans want policing to remain the same. 61% want it to remain the same. And among those who've had interaction with the police, 79% of blacks want the cops to spend more or the same amount of time in their neighborhood. That's a Gallup poll in 2020. And now let's come to the story of Capitol Police Officer Sicknick, which we were led to believe was killed by the rioters, hit by a fire extinguisher or bear spray that killed him. That story's still to come.
Is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So you know, of course, on the date of the riot at the Capitol, and I'll call that a riot inside the Capitol. Outside wasn't so much rioting. They weren't attacking businesses and everything. But that was the day they were beginning in the Congress to basically certify the vote showing that Trump had lost. And he did hold a rally down the street, several hundred thousand around the area, and then probably thousands went to the Capitol. And of that, probably hundreds got inside the Capitol. Some didn't do anything except follow others in. They didn't do anything. They didn't steal anything. They didn't damage anything. They were just following the crowd. But, of course, in the process of all of that, we had a Capitol police officer later that night that died. And the stories began to come out immediately that he was hit over the head with a fire extinguisher. Well, there was never, out of all the video that was taking place, nobody at any point was seen with a fire extinguisher and certainly hitting the officer. And later his brother said, no, I talked to him that night. He said he didn't get hit by anything. He got some bear spray hit him in the face, but otherwise he was good. He said he sounded fine and everything else, but then he died later in the night. And the rush by the leftist media was to run in and say he was killed by the Trump rioters who were trying to take over the Capitol. They weren't trying to take over the Capitol, but they were trying to draw attention and put a stop to the voting. But that aside, the bottom line is, the New York Times, as journalist Glenn Greenwald writes, published an emotionally gut-wrenching but complete fiction that never had any evidence. Talked about Sicknick's, quote, skull was savagely bashed in with a fire extinguisher by a pro-Trump mob until he died. Not true. He was later in his own station house. He did get hit with bear spray. They did the investigation. Did that possibly cause his death? The autopsy finally came in. Why it had to be this late, I had no damn idea that I could give you. But the top medical examiner is saying he died. Are you listening? It was found that he died from natural causes. He suffered two strokes on the day of the Capitol riot. Two strokes. Now, you can say, well, he had the strokes because he's out in the street battling. Look, I feel for his loss, and he still was doing his duty if in turn that led to it. But at some point you can say, well, you can't pin that on them. Maybe he was not in good shape to begin with. He shouldn't have been out there. And I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just trying to say the story and the way it was being peddled by the state-controlled media. As I said, I no longer say mainstream. I say state-controlled media. Their story was he was killed. And then they would also list the others who died that day, and they would say they were all killed. There was only one person killed. Killed. That was a woman who was crawling through the window trying to get into the house chamber when a Capitol police officer shot her one time. Yes, she was breaking the law, trying to go through that window. She had a backpack on. He had no idea what she had. She had numerous opportunities to stop before she got to that point, and she decided to go through the window. He thought, I cannot let her in here. I don't know what's in the backpack. They'd already found IEDs, explosive devices, at a couple other locations, so he shot her. That's the only person that was killed, a Trump supporter shot by a Capitol Police officer to protect the members of the legislature. Everyone else, quote, died. They either had a heart attack or some other medical ailment. And now we have proof that Sicknick was the same thing. They put his body on view as a memorial in the Capitol Rotunda, and he received numerous accolades, and that's fine. I'm not going to take anything that away. I mean, I think about the family that lost a father, a husband. Either way, he was doing his job, and he died. If you die in the line of duty, to me, that's still, even if you have a heart attack, fireman, paramedic, they all suffer the same kind of thing, some kind of medical thing that suddenly happens. He could have had that maybe the day before, which he didn't, or he could have had it days later. But I feel for him and his family, but the lie is unveiled, is fully unveiled. We're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour with Lori Reese of Heritage Foundation on how law and order is being destroyed. Coming up next, he says that we are expecting a war with Russia. In fact, he said it is inevitable. And Russia is better prepared than we are for this war. You do not want to miss that interview. Still to come.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
When it comes to insects in the world, we are outnumbered. A University of Nebraska researcher estimates that there are 10 quintillion insects. That's a 10 with 18 zeros behind it. Now you know you need Rodler, Rodler Pest Solutions. Here's another fact. When one insect gets in your home, more will come and spread and multiply your kitchen, your bathroom, your bedroom. Call Rodler Pest Solutions immediately. Rodler, family-owned and operated for three generations. If you've never used Rodler, I encourage you to start now. If you haven't used Rodler recently, do it now. This is the season when the invasion starts. And remember, we're outnumbered. Get help. Call Rodler, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER. Or check the website, rodtler.com. 877-ROTTLER, Rodler. Pest Solutions.
I am flesh and I am bone. Rise up, ting ting, like glitter and gold. I got fire in my soul. Rise up, ting ting, like glitter. Like glitter and gold. Like glitter. Do you walk in the valley of kings?
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The director of the Russian state-run international media giants, in a recent interview, declared Russia will invade Ukraine, sparking a conflict with the U.S. will force entire cities into blackouts, all-out cyber warfare, nationwide forced blackouts, and he said war is inevitable. Again, this is a director of Russia's state-run international media giants. Part of this involves EMTs. You know what those are? EMTs, electromagnetic pulses, that if you can hack into a system, you can shut it down. But aside from that, if you have an explosion of a powerful enough weapon at a certain position in the atmosphere, it might black out an entire city or half of a nation or more. Are we ready for that? Joining us now, Dr. Peter Pryor, Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security with the Center for Public Policy. Glad to have you on board, sir. Security policy, I should say.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Pryor. Now, you have also served on the Congressional EMP Commission. And when I'm looking at some of the reports you wrote, this is a PC published in Newsmax, talking about how we could stand up against Russia if we go into cyber warfare. Let's begin, first of all, with the threat by the Russian spokesman. Is he just a grandstanding, saber-rattling, or is there some truth in there?
Well, it's a the person who gave that is Margarita Simonyan, who's a woman, but a fanatical pro-Soviet Stalinist-type person and devotee to Putin. Putin has given her many rewards, so she's one of the worst of the worst in that regime. And the threat is absolutely real. Russia has repeatedly demonstrated, most recently in the SolarWinds hack, you know, how vulnerable we are. 18,000 U.S. government agencies and companies, mostly related to defense, were penetrated, and we didn't even know it for 9 months, including the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, whose job it is to prevent a penetration of our systems. And they didn't even know what happened. They themselves were penetrated.
What's the explanation for that?
Well, we are such a high-tech society. Everything is hooked up to the Internet. You know, we established the Internet, and we built our critical infrastructures, including the electric grid, the most important one, never with national security in mind. You know, it's all been driven by the private sector profit motive and making life more efficient. We're not a people who live in a constant state of fear and paranoia and whose objective is to fight World War III, you know, like Russia and China and North Korea, which are, to put it kindly, national security states.
Yes.
They're extremely paranoid. The first thing on their minds whenever they do anything is, how is this going to affect me in World War III? And so they've built their electric grids and critical infrastructures and what internet they have with that in mind. And so there's a great asymmetrical threat here, you know, because the Chinese and the Russians back in the Cold War, they hardened their systems and their electric grids to survive a nuclear conflict, an EMP attack. And it happens that when you're protected against nuclear EMP, which is the worst threat, it also protects you against lesser threats like cyber attacks, you know, because EMP protection entails using electromechanical devices and more old-fashioned retro-type technologies. As I point out in the article, you know, it's no accident that Russia is the biggest manufacturer in the world of vacuum tube electronics. You know,
and many of us thought, a vacuum tube, what the hell is that? I mean, if you ever owned an old TV, you could see them glowing and lighting up in the back of the TV. But folks, many don't even know what that is. And Russia continues to hold for that. And why?
And it's not because they're backwards. They have microchip technologies just as advanced as ours. But they know where their vulnerable nodes are. And so they've backed up those technologies or substituted entirely where they think it's necessary with these electromechanical and vacuum tube type electronics, which are a million times less vulnerable, literally a million times less vulnerable to EMP attacks and are in most cases completely invulnerable to cyber attacks.
So we in this nation, we've been so glad to be progressive and moving forward. We as you said, we've digitized everything. We've moved into the computer age, and we walked away from vacuum tubes and any, quote, mechanical basis for some of these grids, which means while we think we're sitting on top, we basically have exposed our vulnerability.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you can run a whole city. When I was growing up, you know, before the microelectronics revolution happened, you know, we basically had a blue-collar army of technicians working in our electric grids and other critical infrastructures, guys who would, you know, that basically watch a valve, and monitor meters and things like that to make sure that the water was flowing through the pipes in the right way or electricity was flowing through the wires in the right way. And they were smart guys, and they knew how to repair it if anything went wrong. And we've replaced all those people. You know, it saved us money. Hundreds of thousands of these blue-collar technical workers, you can run a whole city now with half a dozen people because of these things called SCADAs, supervisory control. They're basically little computers that do what those people used to do. But if anything goes wrong with them, if they get attacked by cyber, if they get knocked out by EMP, you know, you're basically helpless, and you don't have that blue-collar army anymore to rescue us.
Again, you're listening, Dr. Peter. You're listening, Dr. Peter Price, Center for Security Policy, Executive Director of the Task Force on National Homeland Security, and again, it served on the Congressional MP Commission. And in this article, you did write out in the sense that Russia's electric grid, relying heavily on those retro technologies, just as you described, they still have that basic, quote, blue-collar setup, so whatever you do on hacking or trying to hit them electronically like that, it's immune.
Yes, they even had a major strategic forces exercise back in 2018 where they included they simulated U.S. nuclear strikes on their own electric grid using cruise missiles. And part of the exercise was to recover their national grid, which didn't involve just military engineering units, but they actually drafted students out of the universities to make them participate in the exercise where they would basically work with the military engineering units. Can you imagine doing that in our country?
No.
You know, having a military exercise where what they call a snap exercise.
There would be so many progressives yelling that you're trying to take over our country, right? I mean, they would say that's an improper use and you're basically taking over our country. Some president or someone's trying to become a dictator. That would be the response when we're actually trying to protect the nation.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Not to mention, I mean, I can just imagine the reaction of Antifa and these other student groups, you know.
So let me cover a part of this. Now, the U.S. ambassador to Russia is coming home, he says, just for consultations. He said, I haven't seen my family for a year. But the Kremlin basically did expel some others and basically gave him, you know, kind of the writing is on the wall for you that you probably should go home too. They basically are trying to lock things down, it appears, especially since they've activated some forces for Ukraine. You agree, or is that a stretch?
Oh, some forces. We're very much concerned. They've basically got the equivalent of two armies mobilized on the border. And they're doing it, something that has rarely been done, perhaps never been done before. At the same time, now the Russians are claiming these are just exercises, okay?
Right.
But it's part of their doctrine to achieve surprise by pretending to do an exercise, and then they launch an attack. That's basically how they took Crimea last time.
Right.
And while this exercise with the general purpose forces, so-called exercise, is going on, they're also having another exercise with their ICBM force, the strategic missile forces, which is extremely unusual for those two to be coordinated in that way. And that seems to be aimed at us, just in case they... Now, my hope, though, is precisely because the Kremlin threatened, you know, these blackout wars, these cyber warfare, through their media, you know, and sort of gave us a heads up and said, war is inevitable. We're certainly going to invade Ukraine.
Right.
You know, I think what they're trying to do is intimidate the Biden administration. We've all been anticipating there's going to be a test of the Biden administration,
sure,
right?
Sure. And that's why I said earlier, how much of it's saber rattling, how much is real. But when they're moving the troops and they're making those efforts, they could go real any moment.
They could go real any moment. But on the other hand, you don't have to go real when you win without war. And that's in effect what they've already done.
Well, to that extent, I understand that they believe that if we lose it only if we do nothing, as one Russian was quoted as saying. And they're talking about these vulnerabilities, saying in a conventional war we could defeat Ukraine in 2 days, but it'd be a different kind of war. We'd do it. And when it comes to the U.S., if we just move them back farther, that they're not that close to us, that's a win for us.
Right. Well, you know, we're in really bad shape there, because even by our own war games, when the department, we can't defend Ukraine. We can't even, it will be very hard pressed, even according to our own war games, we can't defend the frontline NATO member states. Mm-hmm. In our own war games, Russia can roll over Ukraine and take over the frontline, that is the former East European bloc, those East European countries that now belong to NATO,
right.
72 hours. The Red Army rolls over them in 72 hours.
That's right.
Same thing in China. China, at the same time that this is going on. And it's really astonished me that the bright bulbs in Washington still haven't figured out.
Well, we're going to have to move fast.
China and Russia are working together.
I hope they're listening to you and others, Doctor. I appreciate very much your time and your expertise. Dr. Peter Pry, Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Very much for your time. We appreciate it, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. We'll do it again. All right, when we come back, the story about illegals and what they demand.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So we know that the leftists, the progressives, when Trump was in office, they made so much noise about how Trump was separating children from their families, how desperate that was, how bad it was, well, how shameful it was. And now White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki is defending the White House Biden policy of admitting migrants if they, are you listening, please, if they first separate themselves from their families. That's what we've been seeing. Those unaccompanied children, those families in Mexico and Central America are seeing and know that if we send our child with the drug traffickers, a cartel, to the southern border, and then they walk across without any adult, then they're going to have to take them in. They will have to take them. So the families themselves are separating their children from them. Now, there are many cases where the family's thinking, I want my child to have a better life, and they'll have a better life there than they will have here. I understand that. But, of course, they're not thinking about the traumas those children face by being handled by these drug cartels, the physical, sexual abuse they might often be subjected to. There was a story the other day. It's just absolutely, it's heartbreaking. A nine-year-old girl being brought by one of the drug cartels to the border. Either she, her family, I guess, paid for them to get her there, but they didn't say in what shape. She's apparently gang-raped along the way repeatedly. And to the extent that her voice box is damaged. I'll let you figure that out. But the bottom line is, this is what they did to a nine-year-old girl. She may be able to speak in the future. They're not sure. But, I mean, the trauma that child went through at 9 years old. 9 years old. And the White House is directly responsible for this. Because they made it clear that we will accept unaccompanied alien children. That's part of what we have in law. But Biden did it when he said, the door's open, come on up. And, of course, allowing them to come across immediately rather than stay in Mexico, all of this. Even Jen Psaki admits this is an unintended consequence. Even as families are doing that, a number of these kids are still taking a very dangerous journey. You think? I don't know what the families think. And in some cases, you have to keep in mind, those children, they might have actually been kidnapped from their family. Or the family might have sold the child to the cartel, and they're going to use them either for drug trafficking and or once they get across the border, they're going right into some sex den somewhere. This is what they're exposing these kids to. And you talk about separation of family and loss of family values. Where are the leftists now shouting that these children are being abused constantly on the way here, and when they get here, we don't know for sure if we're not turning them over to someone who's going to do worse or continue enslaving them for sex or whatever they choose. And it's all on Joe Biden's head and the left of the progressives. You want to shut it down? We've already said repeatedly, just go back to the Trump policies. And they're talking about, no, we're going to throw more money into Central America. That's what Kamala is going to do. She will go to the border over the U.S. and Mexico in flying over the border to go down to Mexico City and maybe to Central America countries. But that's about it. Oh, in the meantime, we got illegals beginning to realize, hey, we can demand and they will deliver. Illegal aliens in New Jersey on a hunger strike. They're on a hunger strike and they're demanding New Jersey state lawmakers pass a taxpayer-funded program. That means the New Jersey folks will pay for it, and feds across the nation, would provide them with potentially billions in unemployment and stimulus benefits. They're going to hold a hunger strike. They want at least $2,000 direct cash payments and $600 weekly benefits. And if we don't get it, we're going to starve. We'll see how far that goes. But it's worked already. It's worked because they did the same thing, reference New York. Illegals went on a hunger strike that lasted 23 days before Governor Cuomo and state Democrats agreed, okay, we'll do something for you. And they moved forward to provide $2.1 billion, $2.1 billion taxpayer money for nearly 300,000 illegals, giving them a one-time payment of $15,600. Now, once they get that $15,600, well, what else are they going to get down the road when that runs out? Another hunger strike, want more. And the New Jersey governor suggested, well, we'll come up with $40 million for the illegals. And you know what their response is? That's crumbs. That's crumbs. We'll continue to go on a hunger strike. And we'll see how many illegals die in your state because we're dying of hunger because you won't give us money. And the left plays into this. They don't know how to get out of this box. They built it. They closed the door, and they don't know how to get out because it's never should have been done. It starts by stopping the flow across the border. Start it there. And then start cracking down on sanctuary cities and states. Take federal dollars from them. But no, you're actually having to fund, because of infrastructure programs, you know, you're funding some of these actions. Good God Almighty. Coming up in the next hour, more on Maxine Waters and her outspoken remarks and how the judge in the Derek Chauvin trial is PO'd. But he maintains his discipline, I think. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.